Hello, welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, as we've been talking about, Donald Trump is in Detroit this Saturday. He'll visit the congregation of Bishop Wayne T. Jackson, and then he'll sit down for an interview to be broadcast on the Bishop's Impact Television Network. Someone who will most certainly not be tuning in to watch is writer and Detroiter Aaron Foley, who is with us now. He posted a short blog piece on BlackDetroit.com, a lifestyle magazine for African Americans in and around Detroit. Aaron, why do you believe inviting Donald Trump into a black church cheapens the significance of that space?
I think it does that because historically, politicians who are campaigning do, especially here in Detroit, do come to the black church to court black voters. But Donald Trump's views on black Americans have been well documented. He doesn't like us very much. You know, he's very, you know, dismissive of Black Lives Matter. He's had discrimination suits filed against him. He refers to us as, quote unquote, the blacks, like we're just this thing that can be tossed around like a rubber ball, you know what I mean? So it's definitely dismissive of how this process works. When you do want to, you know, listen to what black voters have to say, when you do want to listen to black issues, you do go to them in a church. That's where you'll find a lot of black voters. But to come to a church when you are already dismissive of those issues and when you already have very combative views towards the black community, and then you have a pastor who is very known for, you know, all the stereotypes that we have about megachurch pastors, you know, extravagance and flaunting and things like that. Those two things together, it's toxic. It's not right.
Now, Bishop Jackson says this televised sit-down with Mr. Trump isn't a rally. It's not an endorsement. Mr. Trump, we understand, will not be speaking during the time in the church itself. He says, the bishop says, it's a chance to get answers to questions that matter to the black community. But you say you see all of this as?
As, you know, Bishop Wayne T., he has a TV station, and he wants people to tune into his TV station. Now, granted, you know, a church would lose a certain status if they endorse a candidate. You know, that's a line that he can't cross. But at the same time, he's got a TV station. You know, this is an interview that he wants people to watch. And he wants people to see, I've got a TV station, hang around with me after this interview and keep on watching my TV station, which my ministry broadcasts on, watch my ministry, watch my church, donate to my funds, and keep it going. That's all that is. I mean, it's the same reason why anybody would put Trump on TV, because people want to see crazy. This is a train wreck, pretty much. So,
all right, let me just toss this out here, Aaron Foley. What if Mr. Trump visited with a different pastor, one of your choosing? I guess what I'm trying to ask is it the pastor or is it Mr. Trump that you're most taking issue with?
In this case, I mean, I think there's a lot of blame going around, but I think in this case it would be the pastor. And I don't think any pastor in Detroit in their right mind would sit down with Trump because of, you know, how combative and dismissive he is. But here in Detroit, you know, Google has the receipts, I guess, showing that Bishop Jackson is a very flamboyant, extravagant pastor. It's not the kind of down-home church, you know, we would think a presidential candidate would go to, but rather it's a megachurch. You know, not to say that all megachurches are bad, but to many people, this falls under the category of, you know, the pastor driving a Cadillac while everybody else is poor. You know what I mean? It's just very problematic, I guess.
Aaron, what would be your thoughts if Hillary Clinton were doing the very same thing, coming to the congregation and then sitting down and meeting with Bishop Jackson?
I'm not sure what either candidate would have to offer, because in this case, Trump is sitting down with Bishop Jackson in the studio, not in the congregation, so he's only going to be talking one-on-one. It would still be a problem if Hillary did the same thing, because she wouldn't be talking to the congregation. It would just be one-on-one. I still think it would be a ratings grab, even if she were doing it. But it does call into question, like, how either party treats black voters. You know, why go to a TV station or a mega church? You know, why not get there out on the ground? You know, talk to community groups, talk to block clubs, talk to senior citizen centers and things like that. Does it always have to be the biggest, brightest, flashiest church on the block?
And you wrapped up your blog piece at blackdetroit.com urging everyone, particularly people of color, to ignore Trump in Detroit on Saturday because?
Because the last time he was here in Michigan to, quote-unquote, court black voters, he went to Diamonddale. And we all know that Diamonddale, I mean, the black population is very low there. I think this strategy is very fraught with issues. I don't think he will be saying anything that will sway us in one direction or another. I think this is all just a vanity for both him and Bishop Jackson.
Aaron Foley, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Yep, no problem.
We reached out to Bishop Jackson, but he did not respond to our request for an interview. Lansing Mayor Virge Bonnero has taken an unusual step. He's declared a housing emergency in the capital city. The declaration comes after a Southside Lansing hotel informed dozens and dozens of residents they'll be evicted in just the next few weeks. Dr. Joan Jackson-Johnson is director of Lansing's Human Relations and Community Services Department. She is with us now. Dr. Johnson, tell me, how are you feeling right now at your office with this housing crisis going on?
I feel like I'm drowning. It's a lot going on, a lot of people to place, a lot of people that shouldn't be where they are, and we're hoping that through our community partners and resources from the state, the county, the city, that we'll be able to improve the lot of life of the individuals, and particularly the children and the seniors that find themselves in a situation at the Magnuson Hotel.
Tell us, can you describe the building and the living situation for these families?
Well, the building is an older building. The inside of the building certainly leaves a lot to be desired. I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but I spent my honeymoon there when I was a student at Michigan State in July of 1970. The number of times I've been there recently, I told my husband I had a flashback. I don't think anything has changed, including the carpet, since then. So that gives you a rough idea. There are multiple issues, heating, cooling the first floor. They have a portable air conditioner in the lobby. In my opinion, it needs to be grazed and start anew. It is not fit for anyone to live in that particular unit. And one of the challenges is we have families where there are 5, 6, 7 people in a household. I'm looking at some of the information right now. We have a 54-year-old, 48, 27, 22, 9, and a 4-year-old that's in one room with one bed. There are no cooking facilities. So this isn't housing. This is 2 steps away from being homeless on the street.
When do these people have to be out?
They need to be out on or before September the 12th, and at that time I'm told the owners will lock the building down.
What has to happen then, Dr. Johnson, between now and then?
Well, we're going to make every heroic effort that we can to assist people in finding housing, but you'll realize that one of the reasons that some people are here is poor rental history. We have some sex offenders there that have difficulties being lodged, but we also have Public Act 615, which is the utility program that indicates that individuals that lose gas, water, and light will have their houses red tagged. And if you have subsidized housing, such as a voucher for Section 8 or Lansing Housing Commission, it's a violation of your lease, you will lose your housing. And people, we've got about 10 families out there that fell into that situation because of utilities. So if they apply for a state of emergency assistance from Department of Health and Human Services, they will say this is not a crisis season and denied assistance with utility payment. And I'm appalled at that, because if I lose gas, water, or light in my house, it's a crisis for me, regardless of the time of the year. So I think sometimes lawmakers don't realize that they create a worse problem, you know, for families, and then in the end, it costs us more to try to relocate folks and rehouse them when we don't provide some support and assistance.
Lansing Mayor Virge Bonnero has declared a housing emergency. Dr. Johnson, what does that let you do?
The housing emergency allows Lansing Housing Commission in particular to open up vacant units that they have and put people that find themselves in this situation, the Magnuson, they will go to the top of the list because of homeless or becoming homeless through no fault of their own. It hopefully will also allow Michigan State Housing Development Authority to filter down some additional Section 8 vouchers to the city.
The grassroots group Homeless Angels has been working with people in Lansing who need housing, and they put quite a few of these families in this very building. Has their work, in your view, helped or exacerbated the situation?
Well, I think that the heart of the homeless angels certainly is in the right place. Unfortunately, they weren't in a position to provide the support services that people needed to move on. We tried to work with them earlier this year. I took DHHS and a number of other human services agencies there. And, you know, we were only able to help a handful of people because the rest didn't follow through. We have identified a number of people who have been out there for 2 years. We identified a senior with a disability and an animal that's been out there almost 3 years. That's just unconscionable, in my opinion. But the homeless angels are not social workers, and I think they've tried to do the best that they can. They've done some fundraising. We're hoping that some of the dollars that they raise, that they'll use those to help us place individuals in housing. Because coming up with that first month rent and deposit and clearing up any back utility bills will be a huge challenge. The city doesn't have the budget for that, so we're, you know, have open hands and hope that citizens and other individuals with dollars through the state or other resources will assist us. So groups like the Homeless Angels, you have to commend them for having their hearts in the right place. But, you know, they really need to be cautioned in that, is this your forte, and do you need to partner with other agencies with more experience? Sometimes is the case.
I have to wonder, why do you think more people didn't leave earlier? You say you've been reaching out for months. Why do you think more people didn't leave then?
Well, because I think they thought that their histories of rental, with, you know, if you have several evictions on your record, some landlords aren't willing to assist. But in our case, when we can guarantee that rent, you know, over a period of time, that should have been the difference. In other cases, I think it's been an open-door policies where other relatives have joined them. I mean, to have some of the numbers that we have in place is just unreal for one unit. I'm looking at one where there are eight people in a room, and I asked the people at the Magnus, and they said, well, they have some double rooms. Even if it's a double room with a king bed, eight people, where are they sleeping?
This does seem like awfully abrupt notice. And the building's owner, Alvin Pei, lives in Singapore, very tough to reach, I'm told. What's his responsibility in this situation?
Well, the city is researching that to see, because we really, to say that realistically, we've identified 94 people, and that includes the children. To do this in this short time period would be almost a miracle. And so the city is exploring the resources that they have to see if there's a way that we can, in fact, you know, get some additional time.
Why do you think he's closing this building?
I think this is his way of getting rid of the homeless angels and all the homeless individuals that are there. I'm told by Mike Carl with the Homeless Angels that they wanted them to make a commitment to pay 12 to 14,000 a month for rent, and then pay for all of the utility charges.
Where do you think all of these people will be by September 12th?
Our shelters are full. You cannot find a bed in any shelter. We're hoping to move people, you know, who are ready to get out of shelters and open space. But I don't know, to be totally honest with you. And to even think of moving them from one hotel to another would be a total waste of resources that we don't have. So the ideal solution would be to buy some extra time and try to move people from there into housing.
Dr. Joan Jackson-Johnson is the director of Lansing Human Relations and Community Services Department. Thank you, Dr. Johnson, for speaking with us.
Thank you.
This year brought a Detroit area TV commercial for an auto dealership that had a very unique twist.
It's the Toyota Time sales event going on now right here at Fox Toyota in Rochester Hills. Good morning and happy Saturday, Metro Detroit. I'm John Fox, here with my general manager, Rick Hodges.
And that is owner of Fox Toyota, John Fox. And next to him is Rick Hodges, the general manager of the VW and Toyota dealerships for Fox Automotive in Rochester Hills. And he is signing for hearing impaired viewers. Rick, why did you start doing that this year?
Well, you know, one thing we talk about all the time is trying to be able to reach every customer. We live in such a diverse area of different dialects, and we knew across campus wide that we have people that work for us, part of the team, that all together we can speak 16 different dialects, one of which is American Sign Language. But what we were trying to do is send out a message, and how could we send that message to let everybody know exactly what we can offer to the customer to come in so that they can buy or purchase a vehicle at their convenience and be able to understand clearly exactly what they're buying.
Well, so we see you doing the signing in the ads, doing it beautifully. How did you become so fluent in American Sign Language, Rick?
My parents were deaf, so growing up, I learned how to sign before I could speak, and it comes naturally to me. My father is unfortunately passed about 15 years ago, but my mother, who's 88, is still around, and that's how we communicate.
What kind of response have you gotten to these ads? Has it paid off?
It has. Overwhelming. It's not just from the deaf and hearing impaired community, but from everyone. People have reached out to us, thanked us, and also congratulated us for, you know, thinking outside of the box. We've had so many people actually as far out as 50 to 100 miles that have driven to our dealerships in order to purchase a vehicle because we're able to communicate with them and where they can understand all the details of buying a car. There's so much translation lost when you're trying to write notes, and so many questions go unanswered, where here they feel a lot more comfortable, and we're a lot more comfortable because we're able to disclose all the numbers, and it's just been overwhelming.
So when a customer comes in, no matter to which dealership, are you the one sitting down and doing the signing for to kind of facilitate things for them?
I am. I am contacted. My office is actually in the Toyota building, but we do have three different rooftops, Volkswagen, Toyota, and Chevrolet. In the event one of the customers show up in one of the other showrooms, they call me. They notify me. Either they'll page me or they'll call me by my cell phone. And then I make my way over there and go through the whole process with them.
And clearly, the ownership of the dealerships believe this is worthwhile because you started with Toyota and VW, but now you're running them on the Chevrolet as well.
That is correct. The wonderful thing is we do have a brand we feel that appeals to everybody, but certain people are set in buying certain brands, and we want to let them know that, yes, you have an option, not just Toyota or Volkswagen, but in this case, General Motors Chevrolet.
Now, are you aware of any other auto dealerships with this approach and using someone using American Sign Language, at least in Michigan, or are you the first to the best of your knowledge?
I believe we are the first. I have never seen it in all the phone calls and emails that I've been receiving. Everybody, they've stated that this is the first time they've ever witnessed or experienced this as well.
Rick Hodges is the general manager of VW and Toyota dealerships for Fox Automotive in Rochester Hills. Rick Hodges, thank you so much for speaking with us on Stateside.
Thank you very much, Cynthia.
Today's Stateside was directed by Allie Billings and engineered by Bob Scon. Stateside's executive producer is Joe Lindstroth. Contributors include Mercedes Mejia, Mike Blank, and Lindsay Scullin. I'm Cynthia Canty. Thank you so much for listening.